A popular Outcast production.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of What the Hell with Nathan Prell. I'd just like to say that I appreciate you coming back every week, and there are many ways that you can help make this show better. First, you can give me your feedback, what works, what doesn't, and what are topics or segments you'd like to hear. You can tweet at the podcast at WTH_Prell, or to me at TheNathanPrell on Twitter. You can also comment on Facebook or at the site, www.whatthehell.popularoutcasts.com. And while you're there, if you clear your cookies and click on the Amazon banner to do all of your online shopping, the Popular Outcast Network gets a little cut, which will help everyone on the network. And finally, tell your friends about this podcast. Thanks again for listening, and enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to What the Hell with Nathan Prell. I'm your host, Nathan Prell. What a surprise. Here with me today is my dad, Robert Prell.
That would be me. How you doing?
All right, so have you done absolutely anything new in your life?
Anything new in my life?
Because every time I see you, you're just playing Resident Evil.
Well, I just did about 5 minutes ago. I did a ghost ship run by myself, testing out a weapon configuration. I made it all the way to the end with the final ghost Norman boss, and I died. So if I would have stayed on level 49 and only did the normal Norman boss, I would have beat the ghost ship. But I stayed on level 50, and I died because I ran out of ammo. So I have to do a little bit more research and configuration to see if I can't beat the entire ghost ship. Or beat Ghost Norman by myself. And then we'll go for the entire ghost ship. Because I'm only doing like four areas. Then you go to beat the big boss. But in order to get everything, you have to go through each area of the ship and kill all the monsters. Without getting hit to get the Trinity bonus. I don't know if that'll ever happen. I'm not that good.
All right.
I am good, but not that good.
All right.
Getting better. I'm almost there. All right.
Are you going to get the Wind Waker HD?
I don't know. I haven't thought about it. I'm playing too much of this Resident Evil game.
All right. Because did you ever beat Wind Waker on
the
GameCube?
No, I did not beat that one game. Shaley beat it, but I didn't beat that game.
Yeah, I think only me and Shaley beat it.
But they have a new game coming out, Black Ops Ghost. I don't know if they're going to make it for the Wii U. I would imagine so, because they have the 1080 resolution and that kind of stuff on the Wii U now. So I would imagine they're going to have it for that, but that's coming out in November. Black Ops Ghost. So that looks pretty interesting. So hopefully I'll have the Resident Evil pretty much taken care of by the time the November rolls around, and I can get the Black Ops.
Alright.
That's probably the next project. Of course, I still have to get back my Bass Pro Fishing game. I haven't played that in months because of the Resident Evil game.
Yeah, Resident Evil is kind of ruining your life right now.
Well, it's not ruining my life. It's just keeping me occupied. I don't munch out so much when I get home from work, but it does keep me busy. And I am, well, maybe neglecting a few things on the side, like the yard work. But, yeah, it'll get there.
Hasn't been done in a while.
Yeah. But that's all right. It's all about playing a game and having fun.
All right. So I wrote down some things, but it's on my whiteboard, and of course you wanted to record in the living room. So, what was it like growing up for you, Dad? Because you were born in 58?
I was born in 1958. Really, I don't remember the first few years.
Well, obviously.
I can't tell you what happened up till whatever. But let's see. Mom was like 16 or 17 when I was born. I think my sister Pam is 57. Yeah, I think she's 57. And Mom was like 15 or just 14 and a half to 15 when she had Pam. And then I came right along after that. And then Terry came right after that. And then mom and dad got a divorce. And she ended up marrying stepfather Richard. And they had two more kids. But it was pretty tight growing up. We lived in a few spots. And it was pretty hard. Back then, you didn't make a lot of money. Dad was always at work. Mom didn't work for a lot of years. She didn't even drive until she was like 35 or something like that when we moved from Harbor City, California to Simi Valley, California. We did that in 1968. We moved to Simi Valley. And Mom and Dad bought a house with a pool. And we were there a few years, I think, a couple years. And there was a big fire. And Mom had to drive everybody down to the, whatever they call that, evacuation center. And all the hills around Simi Valley were on fire. But she didn't have a driver's license. So after that deal, she worked on getting a driver's license. But we used to have to walk to the store to get groceries and 2 mile walk or 3 mile walk down to the store and a 3 mile walk back to the store or back home from the store to get groceries because we only had one car and dad had to take it to work. He drove from Simi Valley to LA like an hour, hour and a half a day, depending on the traffic. So he's always gone, left at 5:30 in the morning, get home 7:30 at night. So we had pretty tough times in there growing up. Had pretty good times. Can't complain. I got cars. You know, they got, when Grandma Dorothy died, I got her car. Dad helped me buy my first car. Bought me a motorcycle 1 year for Christmas when I was like 16 or 17. So it was pretty good.
What happened to the motorcycle?
We ran the hell out of it. It was a Honda 90. And, man, we beat the heck out of it. We used to drive it all. We used to go to Footprint Mountain. There's a mountain out there. When we first moved out there, it was called Footprint Mountain. And it looked like it had two dinosaur footprints in the side of the mountain. So if you're ways from the mountain and you looked up to the mountain, it was a big hill. And that was a two-hill deal, one big hill and one little hill. And in the big hill, there was two big old cutouts. And it looked like footprints from dinosaur. So they called it Footprint. So we used to go up there. There was a big, actually when we were first moved out there, they used to be able to ride motorcycles up there. There was a big motorcycle riding area. So eventually when they bought the motorcycles, we used to go up to Footprint and ride the bikes. And then they closed it off because they wanted to build homes. And they ended up closing all that down. And they ended up building a bunch of homes over there. Very expensive, high-priced homes. But that used to be a lot of fun because you'd hike up to the top of Footprint with your bicycle and then you'd ride it down. And that was a rocky dirt road coming down. And we used to have some pretty wild stuff coming down the side of that mountain, but it used to be fun.
Is that where Uncle Rick gets his bike
maybe,
love?
Maybe that's where he gets his love for riding a motorcycle and mountain bike riding. So we used to do that all the time. Ride Foot, that was a big thing. Let's go to Footprint. Hike up to Footprint. They had a big old sewer deal plant up there, too, where they did whatever they did to the stuff that came through the toilets. But they used to pump it. It was actually kind of gross. They would pump whatever it is. I'm not sure how it works. But there would be fields of just black tar crap. And I don't know if it's processed shit or what it is, but it was nasty. You had to really stay in one certain area because if you go out there, you can't really tell until you get close to it and you step on it. It's real soft. It looks crusty on top, but it was like soft and smushy if you stepped into it. And it stank really bad. But that was the sewer area. That's probably what all that was a bunch of pile of black tar leftover crap that they processed. But anyway,
all right.
That was pretty fun up there at Footprint for a while. We did that for several years. But we used to hang out with a couple of other guys. I was growing up. We lived down the street was a little elementary school called Bellwood Elementary. We lived on a cul-de-sac. And down the street was the Bellwood Elementary. That's where I went to elementary school. But as we got older, say 13, 14 years old, I used to go down there and there'd be a bunch of older guys playing football. So I used to get involved in that. We'd go down there and play some football. And then the older guys used to, their name was Richard Dennis Ulmer. And they used to come up. Richard was like, I don't know, I think I was 13, 14. He was like 18, somewhere around there, 18, 19. And his brother Dennis was a couple years older than me, like 15, 16. And we used to hang out in the front of the house, and Richard would come up with his radio, and we'd sit around in the front of the house. It'd be me, Richard, Dennis, Rudy, the weird Mexican dude, and a few other people would come up, and then maybe the next-door neighbors, Vicky, would come over, and you know, that kind of stuff. Randy would come out, hang out, and we used to do that in those early years. And Richard used to carry one of those big boom boxes. Back in the day, they weren't that big, but there was radio. He'd always carry around, listen to music. His favorite song was Hot Stuff back in the day. And there was another song. He used to play them all the time. Hot Stuff or something else, Mr. Big Man or something, I don't know, something like that. But he was a big old redheaded dude. Big, bright red hair. You looked at his family. Dennis had black hair. His mom had black hair. His dad had black hair. His sisters had black hair, brown hair, whatever. He had like red hair, and I think one of his sisters had red hair. But we used to hang around with him, Dennis, growing up. We used to do all kinds of crazy stuff, cut school, steal Rudy's car, drive over to the mall and hang out. Rudy had a little Pinto, a little Ford Pinto. And we used to steal his car all the time. Get in there and jump his car. We'd take off from high school and go to the mall. And we used to mess with his car. Pentos weren't very heavy, so if we had enough dudes, we could pick his car up and turn it sideways and push it down the street. We'd pick it up and move it out in the middle of the street. He used to have a big crush on Vicky next door to my mom and dad's house. He used to go over there all the time, and we used to mess with his car while he was over there. We'd get in his car, pick the lock, open up his car, and we'd sit there and puff a bunch of cigarette smoke into the car so it's just clouded with cigarette smoke, and then lock the doors. And that was pretty funny stuff back then. But yeah, that was growing up. And then my next door neighbor was Marilyn and Hank Converse. And they had four girls, which was Vicky, Susan, Becky, and Tammy. And Susan was a little younger than me, but we became next-door neighbor friends. And we ended up being boyfriend, girlfriend, on and off for several years and through high school and things like that. And she ended up getting pregnant. After I graduated, I got a job and went to San Diego. And came back, and she ended up getting pregnant, so we ended up getting married and having a baby.
I didn't know that she was your neighbor.
Yeah, next door neighbor.
I guess I never actually heard the story of how you guys met.
She was the next door neighbor. So she used to come over all the time. She had a rough area at her house. Her dad drank a lot of beer, and there'd be a lot of stuff going on. So the kids would always split. She'd come over to the house or whatever. But we used to walk to school all the time, and I would take the bus. I mean, I had other girlfriends in between the on and off stuff, but always came back to the trusty Susan. She was always there until after we got married and we decided we hated each other and then got a divorce. We were married for 5 years and decided it just didn't work. I was a pretty big stoner back then and was playing guitar in a band and I was gone all the time and she didn't like it being left home with the kid and so she ended up finding another friend, and then we ended up getting divorced. But long story short, that's what happened. But sometimes it happens.
Yeah, but we got Tab out of it, so.
Yeah, we got good old Tabitha. Yeah.
How did you get into guitar?
Well, when I was, I got to say, maybe 10, 11 years old, 12, Grandma Dorothy, which you never met because she passed away a long time ago. She had a heart problem. She was, when I was 17, so that was almost It was like 30 whatever years ago that was, 38 years ago, something like that. She had open heart surgery and she didn't make it, so she passed away. She was only like 40, 45 years old, maybe, somewhere around there, 47. But that was Richard's mom, Grandpa Richard's mom, stepdad, Richard's mother. But anyway, she bought me a guitar for Christmas one year. So that's how I got started. She bought me a nylon acoustic guitar, nylon string acoustic guitar, and then I started taking lessons and bought some music books and started playing guitar like that. Never really got seriously involved because at the age of about 14, 15, I started smoking pot and kind of went a different direction. But I used to play guitar all the time. We'd take it to school, high school, play. Had a couple of guys we'd play with, sit around and play. And then once we got involved in marijuana, alcohol, and girls, guitar got set to the side. So we never really pursued it for a while. We did in the later years, but not the early years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What else?
So what was, you kind of talked about it a bit the last time you were on, but like, would you have any good weed stories or any of your other drugs that you did? Because I know you did all of them.
Well, I didn't do all the drugs. I did, but I tell you, smoking weed, I think I was around, oh, I got to say 15. Between 14 and 15, I do remember the first time, one of the first times I smoked marijuana. I do remember the first time I got drunk. So I'll tell you, the first time I got drunk, I was between 14 and 15. I was all around that age. Me, Richard Ulmer, and Dennis Ulmer were down at Bellwood School, and we had, I think it was 2 6-packs of Colt, I think it was Colt 45 malt liquor. So we each had 4 beers. Well, Colt 45 was a very potent malt liquor beer. And we each drank 4. I got sicker than a dog. I puked my guts up, but that was the start. I liked the buzz at the time. The after effect was just an after effect. So I didn't drink malt liquor that often after that because I got sick, but the beer was pretty good. And every once in a while, we used to be able to go next door to Hank's house, and while he was sitting there, I'd smoke Maryland cigarettes and have Hank's beer because he'd give me a beer. Maryland gave me cigarettes, which we couldn't do at my house because I was too young. But anyway, that was another deal. But around the same time, I started smoking pot. And I remember I was with, probably shouldn't be saying all these people's names, but I'll say R1.
I don't think any of these people really are going to get word of this.
anyway, we were sitting in his truck. And he goes, hey, I want you to check something out. And we're going to, he pulled out a joint. And he had to be, I don't know, he was probably 17, 18 years old, maybe around there. So we're in that age area group right there. And he pulled out a joint. And he goes, listen, I'm going to put this tape on and we'll smoke this stuff right here. We're sitting in the front yard in his truck at my mom and dad's house. So he sticks in Lynyrd Skynyrd. And he kicks on Freebird. And we started smoking this joint. And within a couple minutes, that song blaring away, I got stoned for the first time. And I liked marijuana, and I liked Lynyrd Skynyrd. It was a pretty long guitar solo. You can sit there and get into that while you were getting buzzed. You know. But back in the day, you started doing that. And I did, at that time, I only smoked it when people were around that smoked it. I didn't buy it at that time. I didn't have no money. I wasn't doing anything, you know, paper routes and picking up part-time stuff here and there, but never really had any money. So I didn't really start buying any marijuana until I got to be older, 17, 18, when I actually had money coming in, did I buy my marijuana. So, but at the time, back then, I do remember that we used to buy the bag of Colombian pot, which was a 4-finger lid is what they called it. It would be an ounce of weed, but it was 4 fingers. So when you measured your weed, you put it in a baggie, and it was 4 fingers like that. So you'd have that much weed in a baggie. So it was pretty good a lot of marijuana. You get about if you rolled your joints with a single sheet, you probably get about 50 joints out of it, somewhere around there. So that's how that started. We used to buy that marijuana, and as marijuana progressed, and the people I hung around with were able to buy the better stuff, we started getting into the other type of marijuana, which is the Panama Red, Acapulco Gold, Thai Stick, Skunk Weed, that all that kind of stuff they used to call it back in the day, like that. You know, where you get into like the heavier weed, you can take a bong. Once I was introduced to the bong, you take a bong and you put a little bud in your bong and you shoot it straight through. So you have a little bud in there and a little hole in the back of your bong. So when you breathe in, it sucks the smoke through there, and you pop your finger off the hole and it shoots right into your lungs. So it gives you a quicker, faster high, and you use less marijuana. See? So that was pretty good.
It's economic.
Yes. So you started saving money. It cost you a little more for the marijuana, but you took a bud. You know, one or two hits off the bud was pretty good, and you were pretty high for a while. But we did all that, you know, high school, outside, that was the deal. We smoked a lot of marijuana, and then somebody introduced me to Speed, which Black Beauties, Whites, we used to call them. They're little white pills that... I think they call them crosses or something, crisscross or cross or white cross or something like that. It used to be a little white pill and have a little X on the pill or something. Deal they used to call them, I don't remember, crisscross or crosses or something like that. But you used to get a whole crap load of them for a couple of bucks. And you take like five or six of these. Basically what they are is they're caffeine pills. They're just heavy-duty caffeine pills. But you take a handful of those and you get all speeded out. You stay up, smoke cigarettes and pot, drink beer. So we used to get a handful of those, and as you progress, you know, people introduce you to Black Beauties. Black Beauties was a black pill, very potent speed. You take a pill and you get speeded up, and flying pretty good. And as that progressed, you got into cocaine and crystal meth. So I didn't really do crystal meth, but I did a drug that was kind of like crystal meth. It was the pre-crystal meth type stuff, and it was very potent. Got that from somebody else that worked someplace that had access to some pretty potent stuff. So the cocaine was one thing, but it was expensive. This other stuff was, you wanted a speed high, you do a little bit of half inch line of this stuff, man, it was made you fly. And you'd be speeding for hours, days. But that was all pretty fun back in the deal. But that's kind of like how it progressed into where I went. I went as far as the cocaine. I never did acid or heroin. I just wasn't into the heroin, shooting yourself up, or the acid. I saw people take some weird trips on acid, so I didn't really care for that, even though a lot of people said that was good trips. I didn't care for what a couple people go through. So I just stuck to the cocaine, speed, and alcohol, or cocaine, marijuana, and alcohol. And once the cocaine progressed, I kind of got away from the marijuana. Because I didn't like the feeling of being speeded and then smoking a joint, and it gave you kind of a weird feeling. So I drank the alcohol and the cocaine. But that was later in life, several years later. But as we went through, when you grow up, you know, we get stoned and had some fun. I mean, like I say, I didn't have any fun, you know, getting stoned with a bunch of people and laughing and giggling and rolling on the ground because you can't stop laughing and getting, you know, the side effects of smoking marijuana and getting paranoid and scared and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Sleepy, think you're driving 100 miles an hour and you're only doing 20 down the freeway. You know, all that kind of stuff was all pretty fun. And then I got caught a couple times with some marijuana in the car, and I got citations for it. When I turned 18, the law changed. California that you can have an ounce of marijuana in your car and it would be a misdemeanor ticket. So right after that law changed, I got caught with a buddy, and there was 2 ounces in the car. They were in the glove box of my car. We were at the beach at night drinking and smoking weed because there was just nothing to do. And I stuck a beer can outside the door of my car as a cop patrolled the beach area, he saw the beer can, came over, knocked on my window, rolled the window down. It was full of marijuana smoke because we were smoking a joint. So he's just kind of like, he says, you guys got to get out of the car. Got out of the car. He did a search. All the beer was actually in the trunk. We just had a couple of beers in the front. So then he searched the car and he found the two houses. And he started explaining, well, whose car is this? And I said, well, it's registered, it's my car, blah, blah, blah. He goes, well, I could take you in right now because you got 2 ounces in your car. You're in possession of 2 ounces. That's over the limit of 1 ounce. But there's two of you here, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to cite you each for 1 ounce of weed.
Wow, you got lucky.
I got lucky. And we both got lucky. And he gave us each a citation, took our pot, and took our beer, and told us to get the hell out of there. He did. That's all he did, citation. We were stoned and drunk. And he let us go. He didn't. He could have arrested us for being under the influence. I'm not even sure how old I was. I don't even know if I was old enough to have alcohol. I may have been. I may not have been. I don't know. Was that 20-year-old, somewhere around there? But he let us go. And we started to drive back. He told us to get out of the beach. We started to drive back, but the fog was so bad, we couldn't see. So we pulled back into the parking lot of the beach. We parked the car, and we were just going to crash right there. Well, a couple hours later, the same cop comes back through there. Knocks on the window. So I thought I told you guys to get out of here. He goes, if you don't leave now, I will take you in. So we ended up driving all the way back. We were stoned and in the fog. It was pretty tough, but I got that citation, and we ended up going to court. Me and the guy, same court date. We ended up going to court. We got into the deal, the courthouse. They asked us if we needed a public defender. I said, yeah, I need a public defender. And at that time, whatever year that was, it was like $5 to pay for the public defender. So we get up there. The public defender asks me, he goes, okay, how many marijuana cigarettes can you make out of what you had? And I said, 20. So I just threw it out there. He said, okay. He figured out, okay, it's going to be $1 a cigarette. We'll go for $1 a joint and $5 for the public defender, $25, fine. So at that time, the fine could be up to $125. So I brought my $125 because I didn't want to go to jail. Because he didn't have the fine. You have to work out. Either you work it off or you have to do jail or whatever if you don't pay fine. So they went up there. The judge looked at the file, looked at the deals. Oh, okay, marijuana, blah, blah, blah. He says, okay, $25. So my fine was $25. $20 for the marijuana, possession of marijuana, and $5 for the public defender. So that was the first time. So we wiped our head. Whew, man, we got out of there. Got the hell out of there. And went and got high. Because that's what we did.
Of course.
You know. And the next time around, I was with another friend. And we were drinking and smoking. And I had this car. The car that I had was the car that I got from Grandma Dorothy. It was a Dodge Coronet, 1967, something like that, Dodge Coronet. Nice car. We had it stripped down and painted lacquer black. It was really actually a nice car after it was all painted and everything like that. But at that time, we started having trouble with it when the second time we got a citation. The gas gauge wasn't working, so we couldn't tell if we had gas in the car or not. So me and a buddy were out partying. We went someplace to a party, got drunk, stoned. We had some beer. We had some pot. He had pot. I didn't have any pot. And we decided to come home. And as on the way home, ran out of gas in the car on the freeway. So we pulled over to the side. And as we did that, a highway patrol come flying by. A couple of minutes later, here he comes back around. It wasn't like a minute or so. We started to panic. We see him flew by. When he flew by, we seen him. So we tossed our beer way off to the side of the freeway. And the cop came back. And he started talking to us. And now I was drunk. Dave wasn't as drunk as I was. So he started talking to him. He asked, who's driving? I said, Dave was driving. Because he wasn't as buzzed as me. So he started asking a bunch of questions and everything. So he went to search the car. And up in the visor of the car was Dave's pack of Marlboro cigarettes. He put his Marlboro cigarettes up in the visor of the car. Inside his pack of Marlboro cigarettes was 2 roaches. And I'm talking small roaches, about 1/4-inch size. And the cop ended up giving me, because I was the registered owner of the car, a citation for possession of marijuana, because Dave didn't open his mouth. I said, hey, man, that's his stuff. And Dave wouldn't open his mouth and said that it was his pack with his roaches in there. I ended up getting a ticket. So we ended up, after that, he cited us. And we asked, hey, can you give us a ride to get some gas? He said, nope, you're on your own. And he split. He didn't arrest us. He just left us there. And he gave us a ticket. So we ended up calling Dave's mom. Dave's mom came and picked us up, got us gas, brought back. Boy, we were in a lot of trouble with Dave's mom. She was, you know, it was the middle of the night. It was like 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. So I ended up going to court on that one. And I was pretty scared because this was my second violation within, I don't know what it was, maybe a year, something like that. But long story short on that one ended up costing me $125. The judge says, you ever been caught before? I said, yep. And he said, okay, $125, slam the hammer, you paid the bailiff, and I split. And that was it on the marijuana stuff. Didn't get caught with marijuana anymore after that because we hit it pretty good in the car. Not out in the open when you look in a cigarette pack and it's sitting right there in the glove box. But after that, I did get in trouble again with Dave.
Dave's a bad influence.
Dave was a pretty bad influence on a lot of stuff. Because we used to go, he was my buddy when we did a lot of cocaine, and we'd go to the bar where I met your mother, and we'd go in there and just get wasted. We used to go to the bar called Fingers, and we would get drunker than a skunk and do cocaine in there. So I don't know how I got your mother to go out with me because she never wanted to go out with another drug doper. But she ended up anyway. That's another story.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that later.
But what happened, I got a 502 is what they call it in California, which is a DUI or DWI, driving under the influence, driving while intoxicated, 502. And what had happened, I was with Dave. We were out partying, drinking up a storm. He used to have a motorcycle. He had a Kawasaki 750 that he bought off my dad. And he used to ride that everywhere. So we were on his Kawasaki 750 out partying all day. And we ended up coming back to his house. And I got in my car and I was going to split. We were pretty intoxicated. Jack Daniels and beer. And on the way home, I was going down Sycamore. I was almost home. I used to rent a room from this lady, this man and a lady. They had a house, and they converted their garage into 3 bedrooms and a bathroom, and they rented out each bedroom to people. So I had a bedroom in there that I would rent out. So I was almost there. I was on Sycamore in L.A., and I only had to go maybe another mile. But as you're coming down Sycamore, they have railroad tracks that go through Sycamore just above the L.A. street. And there's a little whoop-de-doo right there, a hill. And you go up over the railroad tracks, a hill, and you drop down. And as I did that, I came up over the hill and dropped down. There was a car stop right there, and I smacked right into the back of that car. And this was pretty late. It's got to be 2 o'clock in the morning. And there was another car stopped on a stoplight. And I hit that car. The guy jumped out of his car. The other people jumped out of their car. And they asked if everybody was all right. And I yelled at them, get the frick out of here, man. I don't need no help. And somebody called the cops. Cops showed up. And I got arrested for DUI. I had an open container in the car. A bottle of beer. They cited me for a DUI. I don't think I got anything for the accident. I don't even remember what happened after the accident. The guy pulled, I think the guy was drunk himself, but he didn't get arrested. I got arrested because I rear-ended him. So I ended up going to the East Valley Sheriff's Station, and they put me there, and I was pretty wasted. And they put you in a holding tank with a bunch of other people. So you're sitting in this holding tank, and as I start to, you know, an hour goes by or whatever, as you start to finally come around, and you're, oh, man, what, you know, you start getting this way. I started asking, hey, do I get a phone call? I said, yeah. All right, we'll get your phone call. So they let me make a phone call after being in there a while, and I called Dave.
Why'd you
hey, man,
Dave,
come
man?
And bail me out. Get me out of here. Hey, dude, I can't do that. I ain't got no money, man. You're going to have to stay there. So that was a dead deal. That was my one phone call I got. He couldn't come and pick me up because he had no money. That guy never had money. Never paid for anything, but that's another story. I always paid for the alcohol, the fingers, and the cocaine, and the marijuana. And anytime we went to a place, I always paid for it. But that's another story. I don't know why I still hung around him that much. I mean, he was a nice guy, but I guess I just had to have a doper partner. But anyway, back to the jail deal. I was in the jail, and as the time goes by, you know, he's still pretty wasted. I got my phone call. He didn't want to come pick me up. So I started pounding on the bars. And at that time, I had a deal where I used to call everybody Butch. Hey, Butch. You know, as just being a smart-ass deal. So I started yelling down at the cops. Hey, Butch. I want to talk to somebody. And finally, a cop came up here. He says, you know, my name's not Butch. And he told me to settle down or I was going to get in trouble. So I just, hey, look, that's all I want to know is, you know, I got to be to work in the morning. This is my first deal of problem. He goes, am I going to get out of here? And he says, well, if you have no record, you'll get out of here in the morning and go about your business. I said, okay. So I settled down. I went and sat down. And as time went by, it seemed like a long time. They come out. The sheriffs come out. And they say, okay, we're going to call out these names. Everybody with these names, stand over here and get in this line right here. And they call out two or three names, and they call my name. I said, I thought I was getting released. And what they did is they ended up taking me to Ventura County, the Ventura County Sheriff's. They said, you're on this list, Mr. Prell. Whoever's on this list is going to Ventura County. I said, oh, come on, man. You guys just, you're on the list. Get in line. So they handcuff you up, shackle your legs and your arms. They stick you in a van. They took me to East Valley Sheriff, or Ventura County Sheriff's, the jailhouse. So we get down to the jailhouse, you get in there, they take your name, all your paperwork, and you're wasting this all this time. And you go inside, they make you strip down, you had to do the shower search, where you get in there and they spray you down or whatever, and they strip you all the way down and look into your every crevice for anything. And you put your deal back, clothes back on, and you go over to a holding tank. And I'm sitting in this holding tank, and I'm there for hours and hours. It seemed like hours, anyway. I don't know how exactly how long I was there, but it sure seemed like a long time. So then a sheriff comes up, opens the door, and he goes, Mr. Brown, come with me. So I'm in shackles, and I'm walking out there, and he says, takes me over to this one area, and he goes, you're going back to East Valley. We made a mistake.
Why? Why?
Because I was a smartass while I was in there, pounded on the bars, calling them Butch. So that's the only thing I did. They took me to that place, made me pay for it, you know, taking my time and scaring me and all that stuff. And then it ended up taking me back to East Valley. And I went in there. I checked out. They gave me all my stuff. They said, see you later. And they pushed me out the front door of the office. So I walked out of East Valley. I had to walk down that big old hill because the East Valley Sheriff's Station was up on a big old hill. You had to drive it. Had to walk all the way down that damn thing and then hitchhike back to the back of the house where I got a ride. Somebody gave me a ride. Took me back to my house. And the guy that gave me a ride, oh, man, you're getting out because he could tell I was messed up. I was bad shaped. Shirt was all deal. I think I even had inky, dirty pants on.
Were you working at the newspaper back then?
Yeah, I was working at the print shop back then. I don't remember if I had inky clothes on or not. I just remember walking down that, somebody picked me up, and he goes, got out of your holding tank. And he goes, yeah. He goes, where you got to go, man? I'll take you all the way there. So I told him where I had to go. He goes, here's what you really need to do. So we were sitting there talking to the guy, and he pulls out an oxygen tank from underneath the front seat of his car, and he goes, anytime you still feel bad, you have this one here, right here, you go, like that, and perks you right up. You're still drunk, but it perks you right up, and you may be able to pass a sobriety test or anything like that. Because the cops did give me a sobriety test before they arrested me. And then you get to see that report, and they write all the stuff down that you did and how you said your ABCs and all that stuff. It was pretty funny. And they did it. But I ended up, with that, you have to go to court because you got a DUI. So I was seeing Susan at the time. Well, I was friends with Susan at the time. So Hank, Actually, this was after Susan, so after we were married. So I was in 1982. So how old was I in 1982? 24 years old.
Yeah.
Okay, I was 24 years old, right? Yeah, 24 years old. 58, 68, 78.
Yeah, it's 24.
24 years old, so I was separated from Susan. I was seeing another girl at work, which I was a no-show, no-call at work, which I never missed days at work.
Yeah.
Even back then, I never missed a day. So they knew something was wrong, because I ended up calling work after I got out and said, hey, man, I got drunk and I got busted. No problem. They let me slide. Because back then, those days, man, you don't show up for work, they fire you.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, get out of here. They didn't have all those, they didn't follow all the rules and the laws that they do today. But I had to go to court, and so I went to Hank, because Hank was had several citations for DUIs in L.A. County, not Ventura County. Mine was Ventura County. They're pretty strict. L.A. County was a little bit different. So he says, go see my lawyer. He'll get you off. So I went to go see his lawyer, and I talked to the lawyer, and he says, yeah, I'll go to court with you, blah, 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 we'll do this. So in Ventura County, you walk into the courthouse. Here's the courthouse. There's a sign over there. DUI or whatever they call it, DUI, first offense, there's a list of stuff you get, no exceptions. So the guy goes up and talks to the DA, and he comes back and he says, you see that list right there? He says, that's what you're going to get, there's no exceptions, I can't do anything for you.
That sucks.
And I said, okay. He goes, that's $200. So I had to pay, just for him to show up, I had to pay him $200.
Oh, jeez.
Give him the $200, he walks out, and I'm left there. He didn't even support me, he just left, there's nothing I can do. So out of that list, it gave you a choice. You either had a suspended license for 90 days or you take 48 hours in jail. So I'm not doing a suspended license because then you got to take the bus to work and you got to do all this fine way. So I took the 48 hours in jail.
All right.
So the fine was $700. What's at that time, 1982, that was a pretty good chunk of money.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
48 hours in jail. I had to do Alcoholics Anonymous classes or go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, like 10 meetings. And then I had to do an alcoholics class, which was another $300, which you go to class and basically you just pay $300 and they tell you how not to get busted. And basically, that's what it was. You had this class, you had to go do it several times. You go in there and they show you this. Well, when you're influenced like that, here's what the cops look for. They look for you sitting over your hunched over your wheel or your window down and you got your head hanging out. These look for telltale signs that somebody's messed up, so they pull you over.
Was that when you got sober after that Alcoholics Anonymous?
No.
Okay.
But we end up, I took the 48 hours in jail. So I did my fine. You could pay it in payments. So I did my fine, like $100 a month, whatever. I did everything I was supposed to do. I called the jail. They said, you have to be here at this time. So I called the jail and I says, okay, what can I bring? They said, you can bring unopened packs of cigarettes, because that's what I asked. If you have unopened packs of cigarettes, you can bring. So I went to jail. Checked myself in. They took all my stuff. They said, you're here for 48 hours. They put me in a, locked me up in a cell at Ventura County. You shared, there was two rows of cells upstairs, like a two-story rows of cells and a big holding cell. So I think it was like 60-some people in there, something like that. There was a lot of people in there. Most of those people were in there for DUIs, 30 days, because after, at that time in California, your first offense was what I got. Second offense was 30 days. Third offense was 6 months. So I went into the jail. They took my cigarettes. They didn't give me anything. So I had to bum cigarettes, which when they're in jail for 30 days, they're under a strict deal. You get a pack of cigarettes or whatever. People don't let you bum. It was a long 48 hours in jail.
I bet.
But I got out of jail. They gave me all my stuff. I got in my truck, stopped at the liquor store and bought four beers.
Of course.
Drank my four beers on the way home. That was in 1982. So in 82, I experienced the cocaine started to kick in. 1982, from here on out, it started to get cocaine, was starting to progress. Me and Dave would go out to that bar where I met your mother. And I'd buy cocaine from a guy at work. They had like three suppliers at work that would sell me drugs. I didn't have to have money. They give me what I want. Hey, I need this. They give it to you, pay me later. Give it to you, pay me later. I eventually paid most of it, but you could always go in there and ask for it. They cut you you know, a good chunk for free. Not free, but they called it front. Yeah. Hey, front me a gram, yeah. You know. So you go in there and front a gram. At that time, depending on where you went, you could pay $80 to $120 a gram. So if you go in there and get an 8-ball, you get an 8-ball for, I think it was like 180 to 200 or something like that. 8-ball is like 3.5 grams stuff.
Why do they call it an 8-ball?
8 ounce.
Oh, okay.
So it'd be an 8 ounce of Coke. So they call it an 8-ball. Okay. But back then they call it, I don't know what they call it now. So you want to buy, hey, give me an 8-ball. So, and you don't know, these were Mexican dudes.
Yeah.
Illegal Mexican people that I used to work with at San Fernando dealing cocaine. So I don't know, you know, if I was getting the right amount. I never weighed it. You know, hey, give me this. All right, here you go. You know, sometimes one guy had a better deal. Some people would cut it with stuff, and some people didn't cut it. That's bad, you know. But we used to do a lot of that. And between 82 and 86, I did a lot of cocaine. And really, at one point, I just saw the light, and I was done with it. And I was dating your mother. We dated for several months before I got cleaned up, but you know, we had ups and downs in there, and at one point I just said, man, this is just not it. And I came home, came to her, and I said, I got to get help. And she took me to the hospital, and we looked at the insurance, and we went out of the hospital, and we talked to somebody there, and we need to get you in ASAP. You need to do this. So we checked this, and I ended up a couple days later, went in the hospital for 30 days for rehab, which got all cleaned up. I met an old man in there, and he got me set up and on the straight side, and I went, got out. I went to AA meetings 5-6 nights a week. I was secretary to meetings. I did the AA central office, purchased all kinds of stuff. I set up stuff. We did a lot of stuff. Actually, the AA stuff was pretty good. It was a better deal after I got clean and sober. I had fun while I was drinking. I got in trouble, but I had some fun. I say it was all not bad. We used to do cocaine, man. Sitting in the bar, you hold up the stuff like that. You're sitting at the table doing coke, and there was a lot of stuff involved in the cocaine years. Playing music, you know. I was in a band for a while called Joined at the Heart. We were half black, half white band, 6 people in a band. 3 members were black, 3 members white. The other guitar player was married to the black lady singer. She was great. She had a voice like you wouldn't believe.
I've never heard about this.
And she had a really good voice at that time. It sounded pretty good, but we were pretty wasted. But he was married to her, and we had a white or a black bass player that was married to a white chick. Then we had a black percussionist player, which had a white girlfriend. And then we had a white drummer, and then it was me. And we called ourselves Joined at the Heart. Prior to that band, I was in another band. I was playing with other people, jamming. And that didn't kind of work out, so I decided...
And that was Max Sloan?
Max Sloan. That's what that was back in the day.
I've only ever heard about Max Sloan. I've never heard about this Joined at the Heart.
But Joined at the Heart came after a little while after that. Max Sloan was with a good friend named Dave. He was we actually...
Different Dave than the...
A different Dave. And that's a whole other deal because he liked to party. And, you know, I'm still friends with this guy now. We're on Facebook. Every once in a while we'll say something to each other, but maybe eventually I'll talk to him when I go back to California. But he still plays. He plays in a couple of bands, and he still does a lot of stuff out there with music. But when I got started, I hooked up with him at Sun Litho, when I was working at Sun Litho. And we used to go to Mom and Dad's house in the garage after work, and we'd get wasted because everybody's at work.
Yeah.
We'd get stoned in the garage, turn the amps on, we'd sit in the garage, and we'd play jam, stuff like that. Eventually, we got a drummer and a bass player, and we rented a studio. We had a place where we went in and rehearsed and everything. He was a good guitar player. We had some good stuff, but again, it was all related around alcohol and drugs.
Yeah.
And at some point, it just doesn't work out. Everybody gets pissed off, and
yeah,
everybody goes their separate ways, you know. But yeah, that was that deal. And after that, while I was still married to Susan, I hooked up with the Joined at the Heart. They were running an ad in a paper, and I think I answered the ad. And I auditioned for the deal. They liked it, so I started playing with them. But again, You know, they had a little rehearsal area inside their house about the size of our living room. We'd go in there, and we'd set up and we would rehearse, but it was all about beer and marijuana.
Yeah.
You know, we'd get high first, then we'd rehearse, you know. But we actually ended up with that. I was with them for about a year.
Did you guys record anything?
Yeah. We did a demo tape.
Where'd that stuff go?
It's out in the garage someplace.
Why have I never heard of it?
We did a demo tape, which was, you know, it was okay. I mean, at the time, you're looking at 1983, 1984, you know. It's a different kind of sound of music. They called it gospel, but it's not really. It was just a little bit different sound. I thought it was okay. When we did a demo tape, we sent some demo tapes out. We went and did a couple of shows. We did a few gigs in Simi Valley and L.A. And we talked to an agent. The agent was interested in our group, but she says, here's step one, two, and three you got to do before I sign you to work with you.
Yeah.
He said, well, I'll work with you as your agent, but here's what you got to do. First, you have to prove yourself. Number one, you have to have a following. You prove yourself. We had the following.
All right.
Because this was a black family, and I'm telling you, the relatives were hundreds. When we went to do a gig in L.A., there was hundreds of people. We would pack the house.
And all just family of the
family,
band members?
Family and friends of the basically two members. And you go in there, yeah, it was. We had a good time, but we packed the house. Never made any money because while we were there, most of the time you passed out and you gave free tickets. So you made money off the door. So if somebody paid $3 to get in the door, you made money. But while we're there, we drank. There's six of us.
Yeah.
There were six of us in the band and a couple of helpers. Everybody can have a drink, and they're charging for that drink. There goes your money.
Yeah.
I think we had one gig where we actually made $40. I guess here's what you guys gave. Here's $40. So it's like, oh, well, hell, buy us a bottle of booze, and we finish it off. But we ended up doing a demo tape. We went to a recording studio and bought several hours. We went in there, we had a bag of weed, a bag of coke, some alcohol, and went in there for a couple of days, and we did five or six songs, a handful of songs on a demo, and then we made a cassette, and we sent out several cassettes to some, they actually had a connection in, a real far connection into a band, an old 50s, 60s band that we sent some demo tapes to. We got some of the tapes back where they listed a portion of the song. You can tell because the song was played. And the tapes come back. They sent the tapes back and you can tell because it was like halfway through a song or something like that. And we never did anything after that. The one guy, the guitarist, that was married to the singer, he worked for... I can't remember who he worked for. He worked for some place where he had secret classification, whatever they call that. What do they call that? You know, where you can't talk about your job or anything like that. And he got laid off, and then he got an offer to come back to work. But so when he went back to work, the band kind of split, went separate ways. And it was about a year, year and a half maybe that we were together. But that's what part of the divorce was with Susan. Was I was out six nights a week, rehearsal and playing. And I'd get home from work, because I worked day side. I'd get home from work, go to rehearsal, for we had a gig, we go to a gig. And I'd get home 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, go to work, come home. So I can see where she didn't like it.
Yeah.
So, but that was a fun part of the year. That was in between, that was after the, because 82, I got the DUI. So that was after the DUI. I got involved in that. And, so we did a lot of drugs in there, but that was a fun year, year and a half with the band. Got to play, you know. And then after that, we got a divorce, and I started rolling more into the cocaine usage and alcohol usage. Me and Dave would go out, you know, what do they call that? Happy hour at Fingers. Fingers was a barbecued rib joint.
Okay.
And if you know, the guy that owned Fingers, his name was Frank. He had a picture of himself out on the deal. His sign had a picture of Frank like that. And he looked like, if you know who Frank Zappa is, you'd have to look at Frank Zappa. This guy looked like Frank Zappa.
All right.
So, but that was his picture, Frank's big mustache.
Is this place still there?
No. It's not there. But it was over by, it was off of Yosemite in L.A. Yosemite in L.A., I think. And it was just a little dive bar. But your mom worked there part-time. She worked for Cigna Insurance. And she was doing this as a second job.
All right.
But me and Dave used to go there happy hour, 4 or 5 o'clock every day. You go in there and get 7 and 7s for half price. So whatever, I don't remember what it cost, $1 or something like that, $1.50. But we'd sit in there and drink, and we're there almost every day. You know, Dave was married to a girl, and she didn't like me because we'd go drink, and I'd pay for everything. Always did that. But that's where I met your mother. I'd go in there, and after a while I started hitting on your mom, and I don't date the clientele. And I started hitting on her more and more, and eventually something happened, and she gave me her phone number, and we went out on a date, and so we're here now. That's what happened.
All right. I didn't realize that you didn't get sober until like a year before Shaylee was born.
I got sober March 3rd, 1986, was when I went into the hospital. So that was my first day of sobriety. They take you in, you go into detox, they watch you. At that time, I wasn't bad. When you look at it, I was using a lot of cocaine.
Yeah.
My financial status was bad. But the alcohol, I was using less alcohol, it was used more cocaine. But the detox wasn't bad, but then, you know, then we did 30 days in-house, and you have to learn about yourself. You know, they try to teach you things, and you go to meetings and one-on-one counseling. And,
yeah.
You know, the doors were open. You walk out anytime you want. But you walked out, you're done.
Yeah.
You know, and if I walked out, my insurance didn't cover it. And that was $10,000.
Oh, geez.
So, you know, it was my share, I don't remember what I paid. It wasn't that much. But it was like 10 grand for me being at 30 wow. days locked up.
That's a lot of money.
You walked out, insurance didn't cover you, you're on your own. But we did a lot of stuff in there. I met Don Reeb was my sponsor. I met him. I met a lot of good people in there. We got involved in the AA program. As I say, went to a lot of meetings. Your mother was there on almost every meeting. We went to coffee after the meetings. We hung out with the people. We did a lot of stuff. We did a lot of camping. We did camping trips and other different trips around.
You still friends with any of these people?
I don't see any of them. the deal with that is, you know, we lived in Simi Valley, and when we moved to Palmdale, when we finally bought our first house, we bought a condo in Simi Valley, and we sold that, and we bought a house in Palmdale. I still tried to stay connected, but as time progressed, people go their separate ways.
Yeah.
You know, Don Reeb eventually passed away, and most of those people I hung out with went back out and started drinking. So the standard rule was 1 out of 10 is going to stay sober.
And you were the one?
So far, I'm the one. The 10 people that... Because we had about 10 or 12 people in my group. And I was the one. Everybody else in my group was gone.
Wow.
Before, they went to AA meetings. But eventually, they drop out, and they come back. Oh, man, I used, I drank, came back, you know. It's just at one point, when you see it, some people just can say, I'm done, man. I don't want to deal with that anymore. And you don't. So that's what happened with that. That's why I stay sober. I don't want to deal with that. I like to smoke marijuana every once in a while, you know. The cocaine I don't have no use for. But sit on the couch, watch TV, smoke, and relax. Because that's what it basically does. It's going to make you relax. You know, will that ever happen again? I doubt it.
We'll move out to California. I'm sure you got enough problems to qualify for medical marijuana.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, yeah, that's true. If they did that, maybe I would. You know, they'll have it out here eventually. But yeah, that's pretty much where all the drug stuff went. But clean and sober, you know, it was pretty rough that first year being sober. I almost drank and used a couple of times, but I did. I kept going to AA. I made the phone calls like they told me to do. If you have a problem, I don't care what time it is, you call me. And I did it. 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. If I was struggling, I called somebody. Woke them up. And I went to people's houses. They come over. And Don, my sponsor, he was the one I mostly called all the time. I'd go over and play video games with him.
Yeah.
We played Nintendo Golf because he had a Nintendo system, the original Nintendo.
Yeah.
And the only game he had was golf. And we'd go over and we'd play golf. But after you play golf for a couple of hours, it's like, okay, man, I'll feel better and everything like that. That's what the program was all about, everybody helping each other.
Is that why you got a Nintendo?
I got a Nintendo before he did. Okay. I think I had it before. Because when I got sober, as soon as I got out of the hospital, I went and bought it. I went and bought video games.
So they had something to do?
So I had something to do. I'd go to work, go to meet, come home, play video games. You know, it would be up till 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. So you take, part of being an alcoholic, part of an alcoholic or drug addict's problem is the obsession.
Yeah, you got to replace it.
You replace that obsession. So video games replace the obsession. And that's what got started. And I played a lot of video games those first few years. I mean, tons of games, hours. I used to go to the swap meet every Sunday. They had a little video game deal every Sunday. Swap meet, we'd go in there and see what new games were up. Because you'd get it for $5 cheaper at the swap meet than you could at the store.
Yeah.
So we'd go to the swap meet every Sunday. Right to there, any new games? No. Next week, any new games? No. Next week, new game? Buy it. You know, you go home and play for hours. That's why they still have got all those games.
Yeah, we still have all the games.
So, but that's how we got started with the stuff in the video games. And that just continued to progress where we are today. That's why we play some of those video games. You know, it's an obsession.
Yeah, our whole family is pretty dependent on
video games. But you find a game that you like to play, and you're going to play it and play it and play it.
Yeah.
You know? Plus, it gives you something to do. If I didn't have that, what else could I do? I mean, you know, I'd have to find another hobby. You have to replace it with something.
Well, you have your
I like to
photography and stuff.
I like to do the pictures and do that, but you got to go out to do the pictures and stuff. So we're eventually going to get back. As soon as it cools off, we're going to start getting back into that because I got a whole list of stuff I want to do. So I'm to that point now in the video game that maybe I can swing a little bit off, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to give it all up. All right, how long have we been talking?
For a while. Let's see. You kind of touched on how you met Mom, so what was it like? What was it like dating Mom? Because Mom's side of the family's pretty crazy. What was that like?
Well, back then I was pretty quiet. Now we were complete opposites. But back then your mother had a very nice body, and she was pretty and had a very nice body. Everything like that. She was real skinny, flat stomach. Everything like that back in the day, like we all were back in the day.
Yeah, you had a pretty nice hair going on.
I know, I had some pretty good hair back in the day, man, but not anymore. Yeah, she had a pretty wild family. It was pretty loud, noisy, all the time. Something going on at that house, all the time.
Because at that age, wasn't most of the kids still living at home?
Yeah. Well, there was a few. There was a handful of kids still living there, yeah. But it was always busy. Always busy all the time there at that house. Go over there, everybody come over, something going on. A lot of times I didn't say anything. I just sat around in the chair because everybody, I didn't have to say nothing. Everybody else, blah, 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 doing all this stuff.
I understand that. That's a lot.
You just sit there and listen. Somebody says something to you, you just say, yeah. You know, so it was all right. I mean, we had a lot of fun. We went to Disneyland and did all that kind of stuff on our first date.
How long were you guys dating before you got married?
We started dating. I don't even remember when we started dating. We got sober in 86. We started dating in 85. Had to be in 80. Maybe it was 86. I don't know. I was sober 9 months when we got married. So we were about maybe a year. I think it was a little over a year. Maybe we were dating. Then we got married. Because I remember we had a Christmas and we bought each other the same present. We went to gym. Back then it was Jimco instead of Costco.
Yeah.
Stuff. Jimco used to be a membership. They had a Jimco in Simi Valley. We went to Jimco. We bought each other out of the deal. We didn't realize. We bought each other the same thing. It was a phone answering machine. Same one. Hey, man. I said, there you go. So we ended up doing that. But I think we were together probably a year or so. A little more than a year. Because I was sober. We got sober in March. And we got married in October. So it was April, May, June, July, August, September, October. So 7 months.
Shayla was born exactly a year after you guys got married.
Yeah, probably. Well, we...
We got married in October.
We got married in October, and we came to Vegas, got married at Circus Circus, and we came back, I guess a couple months, we decided to, we'll have a family. So we quit smoking, and that's Shady. So,
and you guys were living in a condo in Simi Valley?
We were living in an apartment.
An apartment?
At Patricia Street Apartments. It was Patricia Street Apartments. A dive apartment complex. At the time, it looked pretty good back in the day, but it's pretty much a dive. Yeah. But we ended up, at that time, we found a condo, and Mom and Dad, I still had problems from the drug-related stuff. I spent a lot of money. So I owed the IRS. Credit cards were maxed out. I took a loan out, personal loan from the bank to pay for drugs. Jeez. I went in and borrowed $5,000. I needed $5,000. What do you want to do? I want to pay off my credit cards. So they said, okay. So they did a credit check. Okay, no problem. I had a check cut. They gave me $5,000. It paid off my credit cards, gave me the balance. Within that balance, well, I don't know what it was, a couple $1,000s. I went through that like that, and I recharged my credit cards like that.
Oh, man.
$200 a month I paid on that $5,000 for 3 years.
Jeez.
So it was like 75 or something, almost $8,000 payback, you know. So had a little bit of trouble with that, but we wanted to get a condo, so Mom and Dad coughed up some dough for me. They went out and borrowed money on their house. Now, I had to pay it back, but what they did is they went out and opened a line of credit on their house and gave me the money. So I paid off. I paid a down payment on the condo, and I paid off all my debt at that time. So we got the condo, but I had to pay them back every month. I had to pay that bill that they got.
Yeah.
So they didn't give me the money. They just went out and got a line of credit so I could use the money. But we had a condo in Simi, over by Simi High, Archwood Lane condo, and we lived there for over a year. Shady was born at the Patricia Street Apartments, but we lived there for over a year. And we decided to move to Palmdale, and we put the condo up for sale. But we'll come back to that as another story. How long have we been talking?
I think over an hour.
All right,
so.
Let's cut it short.
All right,
this is part one. We'll come to part two in a couple of weeks. We'll just remember where we stopped up at the Archwood Lane Apartments, or Archwood Lane Condo. Because that's another story right there about why we didn't take the first offer. But that'll be another story another day.
All right.
All right. So is that it? Are we done? I gave you a pretty good portion of my life.
Yeah, I just want you to...
It'll keep people bored for a while.
I think people will find this interesting. I just want you to play something. Oh, yeah. You have to play every time you're on.
Well... All right, let's see if we can play out. I haven't played in a long time, so. Back to Revelations.
Now leaving popularoutcast.com. It's like the Nerdist, guys. This is the end.